Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Addiction Unlimited podcast, where you get to learn everything you want to know about addiction and recovery. I'm your host, Angela Pugh, co-founder of Kansas City Recovery, life coach, and recovering alcoholic. To learn more about me, you can listen to episode zero on your podcast app or find us on the web at addictionunlimited.com. Hello, my friend. Welcome back to another episode of the Addiction Unlimited podcast. I'm your coach, Angela Pugh. You may know today's guest from the 250 and Beyond podcast. She quit drinking at 45. She said she felt like she'd been run over by a truck for years. She was doing the back and forth thing, yo-yo sobriety, as I call it. And she finally decided to quit drinking after 30 years of a close relationship with alcohol. Finally tired of settling for that life. Our guest is Lori Massicott, and she loves to talk about the disadvantage of just a small amount of alcohol, from sleepless nights, waking up in the morning fuzzy and hungover, to ending the day with another drink, even when you promised yourself you weren't going to drink today. She found herself in midlife, stressed out, not liking her work, had no confidence, and she knew she had to make a change. And if you aren't a 12-step person, you're definitely going to love the inspiration and motivation that comes with Lori's story. Let's dive in. Hi, Lori. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Angela. Thank you for having me. Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Yes, I'm so excited to have you on and let everybody learn a little more about you, because you have a fascinating story and everything you're doing is incredible and my audience is going to love this. So I would love to jump right in and just have you tell everybody a little bit about you and what you do.
So I call myself the midlife sobriety coach, because I help midlife women and beyond transition to an alcohol-free lifestyle. And I am, I'm 56 years old. I stopped drinking when I was 45. So it's really important for me to spread awareness of sobriety as an option for everyone. And I have a podcast called 250 and Beyond that I started back in 2018. And I live in San Diego with my son and husband and our new puppy, Franklin Blue, who's keeping me on my toes over here. And I just love my life now. Aging and sobriety has just helped me so much. I always thought that I was going to be somebody who was stuck in work that I didn't really love, that really stressed me out, that really drove my drinking. Somebody who wasn't going to have any confidence in herself, who followed along. And I have completely changed my life over the past 10 plus years since I quit drinking. I'm really happy about it.
Yeah, for sure. It is. I love that you have this focus on that particular time of life, right? Like I am a midlife person myself and have been going through all of these changes and navigating this crazy situation. So I love that you have a focus on that. And also talking about the benefits of approaching this time, this phase of life, sober, right? And the differences that that makes. Like, nobody is talking about that.
Yeah, it's really important. And, you know, Angela, you were on my podcast, this last month. So you were on my podcast recently and we got to talking about it. We've talked about it off the recording, of course, you know, about perimenopause. And it's such a good time for women to remove the alcohol, because for many, many reasons. For me, I was thinking, is this perimenopause? Is this my drinking? Is this something else? It was really hard for me to differentiate between the two, because I'm sure that we'll talk about this, but I stopped drinking at 45 and I was in the thick of perimenopause. But I wasn't getting that idea from the doctors. I would go to the doctor and they would say, no, you're fine. Dude, my blood, everything's fine. I was doing my research. I wanted to soak up everything about menopause, because I had a feeling something was going on and I knew it had to be really big for me to stop drinking. I knew that alcohol and menopause were not going to mix well for me. I was struggling big time and I couldn't differentiate between what was really happening in my life and what was causing it. That's what I want to say. And also, this time of life, it's a great time for us to be clear and to be present, to be aware of what we're doing in our lives. It's time for us to take care of ourselves, protect ourselves, be safe. You know, I had so many fears that my drinking was going to take me into the next 30 years because I had drank for 30 years. And at that time I would be 75. And I just kept in visualizing myself sitting there drinking wine on my couch and thinking, oh my gosh, how much am I going to be drinking by then? Because a couple bottles in one sitting wasn't enough at 45. And I started getting really worried about just the safety of it all, like what that would mean for me as I was getting older. So I think there's many, many benefits to going alcohol free later in life.
For sure. A couple of things you touched on. One is the doctor aspect of it, right? And the other is the piece of how important it is as you are approaching midlife, how important it is to really be in tune with your body. And if you're filling your body with substances, you don't know what the heck is going on or what you're really feeling, and emotionally and mentally as well, right? Because we're fogging our brains too. And going into midlife, this is a time that it is imperative that you understand how you function, how you feel, what your baseline is, because everything gets wacky. But I want to touch on that doctor piece also, because this was the most frustrating thing for me on the planet when I went to my regular doctor and said, listen, something's going on. Can we test my hormones? And she just shook her head. She's like, no, we really can't. There's nothing we can really do about that. And I started running down some of the symptoms I was having at the time. And this was years before I went on hormone replacement. And I went through the symptoms and she's like, yeah, sounds like you're in it. You're perimenopausal. Welcome to the club. And just sent me away. And I felt so discouraged and dismissed and minimized and lost, right? I'm like, well, damn, if my doctor isn't even going to help me, like, what do you do? You know, at that time, I didn't know there were all of these independent hormone clinics. I hadn't gotten to that part of my journey yet. But it was a really discouraging and frustrating situation. And from what I understand now, talking to so many other women about this, that's not uncommon.
It wasn't for me. And the same, I've heard that from other women, my friends. You know, there was something that they said, and, you know, I'm not a doctor, but they would say, you know, you have to have your blood tested at a certain time. Like it was either after your cycle or before your, whatever it was, I cannot remember. But it was like, well, I'm not even having a cycle. It would be on and off. And, you know, there was no way to test it. So that's exactly what they would do. And I finally found a gynecologist that I really liked. But going to my GP, who was a woman, it was the same thing. It's kind of like, we're not going to find it in your blood work, but you're having heart palpitations. You can't sleep. You're really moody. You know, all the things that were happening with me at the time. Yep. That's perimenopause. But when I found this gynecologist, she really helped me further because I was very scared at the time. I was scared. And I would leave the doctor just thinking, oh my gosh, what's happening with me? I must not even know what's going on, because if they're telling me I'm okay, I'm not. I don't feel well physically. I definitely don't feel well mentally, emotionally. I was losing it, and I was drinking more to cope with all of that. And it really picked up. And so I just, I know that for us as women to be in tune with what is going on with our body, to be in tune with what is going on in our environment is very important at any age. As we get older, it's essential.
For sure. And for all my guys that are listening to this right now, I want to say,
oh, hi.
Hi. You know, your journey as a man will definitely be different, right? You don't have the baby making parts. So men are not going to experience the same thing that women experience, certainly not the level we do. But men do have their own process that they go through. For sure, their bodies are changing also as we age. But I would encourage a lot of my guys listening right now, I would really encourage you to stay tuned in this conversation, because where you don't have a cycle, and we get that, and there are some things in this that you're not going to relate to, but you also have wives, girlfriends, moms, sisters, Right. And it's important to understand that this is something for women that is beyond our control, right? There is this stage of life that is coming for every woman on the planet that is going to wreak havoc to some degree, right? Where our moods are going to change and our bodies are going to change and we feel different. And it's not so simple or easy. So be mindful that the women in your lives are going to be experiencing this. And the more you know about it, the more supportive and kind and respectful and loving you can be through that journey too. And I just wanted to say it because I don't want everybody to tune out thinking this doesn't apply to them. When it's like anybody that has a woman in their life, this applies. So it is important. Absolutely. Conversation.
Yeah, I like that you said that because men, they do go through it. And I believe it's called andropause. There is something that is that time of life, right? And especially if you were a drinker, you know, like me, I started drinking at 14. I mean, by the time we get to midlife, it's like, what else is there for us? Like, I cannot keep doing the same stuff over and over. And I think that's universal.
Yeah.
That's a universal message.
Well, and all the questioning, right? I say this all the time. Aging is one of the weirdest experiences of my life. It's a very strange thing to go through. And I feel like there are so many pieces of it that nobody tells you about. There are things that are so frustrating, especially when you are a very independent, capable person, and all of a sudden you have limitations, right? Like, I'm just in my early 50s, but I definitely get a little more tired than I used to, right? It takes me longer to recover from a hard workout than it used to. The single most frustrating thing about aging to me is eyesight, right? I have to wear readers now. Anything within 2 feet of my face, I have to wear readers. And there's barely a moment of your life that you're not reading something, looking at something. Like, readers are just a part of my existence now. But nobody tells you how many other things that affects, right? Like, now, because of my vision, it is much harder. Makeup becomes a bigger challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Plucking eyebrows becomes a bigger challenge. Doing fingernails and things like that. Like, all of these things that have just been my life for 50 freaking years, all of a sudden are hard. And nobody tells you that stuff.
It's a trip.
It is
a definite trip. I will say, for anybody out there, especially the younger gals who are listening, everybody experiences it different. And I do know people in my life, women who say, I had no problem with perimenopause. I was just like 1 year without my cycle. It was done. I didn't notice anything. There are those really sweet unicorns out there. It's like, yes, when I tell my story, I have to remind everybody, because it was a dark time for me. It was a really dark time. And I had lost my mom when I was 42. And I was really kicking up the drinking at that time. And I was in it deep at that time. So yeah, menopause was one of the definite catalysts to me quitting drinking.
Yeah. And I love that you said that too. That is such an important thing to highlight, right? Where this process for me was difficult. It was definitely difficult. It was not nearly as difficult as the last couple of years of my drinking. It doesn't even compare to how dark and sad that time was for me. So yeah, it was hard, but it wasn't as hard as some of the breakups I've been through. You know, like, I don't want to paint this picture like it's so terrible. That's not the case. It's just weird. It is a weird process to go through. Aging is weird when you start looking in the mirror and you don't really look like yourself anymore. You know, when your body changes and you don't have so much control over it. You know, if I gain some pounds now, it's very different than when I gained some pounds at 35 or even 40. I feel like I really went through this really mid-40s. And like, even my eyesight, I didn't need readers, I think, till I was 47 maybe. So, you know, it came a little bit later. But yeah, it's not horrible for everyone. It's just a very interesting process.
And it's a natural transition. I feel like us talking about it and so many people talking about it, because back when I was going through it, there weren't that many people, especially on social media that I knew of. I really wasn't on social media that much, that were talking about it. But hearing other women's stories and educating ourselves, and there's so many ways to do it online, Like you said, see a specialist, that if you're not getting the help from your GP or your gynecologist, there's so many great conversations happening around menopause. I mean, Oprah started talking about it. Drew Barrymore started talking about it. It's like, that's what I needed back then. I needed to hear that because I was asking friends and they're like, oh, we're not going through that yet. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, here I am, the old the old drinker. Nobody's experiencing what I'm experiencing. Nobody's having these meltdowns that I was having. You know, it was just like nobody, I felt alone. Mm-hmm. And you know, when we feel alone, we feel so shameful and embarrassed. And that's when my drinking was just like, come in, like, let me take it all away.
Yeah.
Alcohol was my friend.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's how, not alone. That's how it preys on you. And we do that, right? We do naturally look for ways that we are different. And we, our brains naturally highlight the ways that we don't fit and why we're different and why we, nobody relates to what we're saying. It, and that is not such a charming piece of an addicted brain, right? But it is how alcohol preys on you. Alcohol needs you to feel lonely, and it needs you to feel isolated and separate from everybody and everything else. It needs you to feel bad about yourself and your life and your circumstances. That's how it preys on you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because I started drinking, like I said, at 14. And at the time, I would be considered a popular kid. And I wanted to be popular and I wanted to fit in, and but I already was. I just saw that other people were drinking, and of course I'm going to drink. I mean, I grew up in Long Beach, California. It was a very close knit community. I've had friends since I was in kindergarten, and you know, this is what we started doing at a very young age, and I wanted to fit in, and I carried that reason why with me for the next 30 years. I really leaned on alcohol for liquid courage, my social anxiety. I just felt like I couldn't do anything without drinking alcohol. And I was just, I was in it. I was wrapped up in that idea that this is going to take everything away. And especially as I was going through the perimenopause, I remember going to the cardiologist. I had to go to a cardiologist to get all these tests done because I was having heart palpitations, which, you know, again, I'm not a doctor, but they chalked it up to hormones. Mm-hmm. And that was coming from my gynecologist, and I got all the tests done and everything was okay. But I was drinking so heavily during that period, and nobody really, I don't even remember anybody really asking me about it, right. But I was drinking to cope with the fear that I had around all of this. Yeah, it's a thing. And I know a lot of women do this. And that's why, again, this time of life, it's really a great idea to remove the alcohol just to give yourself some time to see where these feelings are coming from.
Yeah. What was the journey of quitting drinking like for you? What happened that, you know, that kind of moment? We all have a moment where it's like, oh my gosh, I can't live like this anymore. What was that moment for you?
Well, it's interesting. I was starting to feel, like I said, I started at 14. So my 20s, drinking, having fun, great time. Met my husband when I was 28. And we drank a lot together. Had my son when I was 33. After that, it started to go down a little bit. I wasn't happy. I put on a lot of weight during that pregnancy. I couldn't take it off. I didn't take it off almost until I stopped drinking. So that was a good chunk of time. I was working a job that I was in for 20 years. I was in the real estate industry. I was an escrow officer in Southern California. Just a stressful job. Didn't match my personality at all. But that's what you do, right? You suck it up. You go to work. You make a lot of money. Then you spend it on stuff you don't need. That's what I did. And so I had a lot of stress in my life. And around my end of my 30s is when I really started to notice, like, oh, I feel bad. My hangovers are lasting longer. I'm not rebounding like I used to. I mean, I had dubbed myself the party girl back in the 80s, and that's what I hung on to. I was the party girl. I could rally. I could, you know, and that was starting to affect me late 30s. It wasn't until after my mom passed. That was a very, very, very hard time for me. I started to drink a little bit more. I mean, I was already drinking enough, but I was drinking a little bit more. And one of my cousin's kids said to me one day, you know, something to the fact that you may be an alcoholic. And I was around 43 at the time. And that made me set up and pay attention because no one had ever said that to me. I was doing what everybody else was doing, or so I thought. And that really made me set up and pay attention. And I started to Google, am I an alcoholic? I started, you know, taking the test. I wanted to do everything in my power to prove that I didn't have a problem with drinking alcohol. I wanted to be all of a sudden overnight a normal drinker that could just take it or leave it, have it at social occasions. So for about 2 years, I played the moderation game. I tried my hardest at following all my rules, only drink red, don't drink white, don't drink champagne, do not touch the bubbly, because that will just take over. Drink like you don't want to drink. That's how I was trying to drink. And I realized after 2 years, I very rarely only had one or two glasses, very rarely. I was so exhausted by the time I hit 45 that I just knew. One night, I had no intention of quitting drinking. My husband and son were camping, and I was sitting there on the couch. I had two bottles. That was my thing. I was only buying two bottles at a time. I wouldn't store it, you know, all this stuff. And I had about half of it, and I said, I heard a voice say, you've had enough for two lifetimes. You have to be done with this. And literally, Angela, I got up. I took the wine. I dumped it down the sink, opened the other bottle, dumped that down the sink. And I stood there crying in my kitchen alone. And I just thought, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I feel like this is it for me. I cannot keep drinking. And so the next day, it's like, I don't know. I very rarely ask. I started to ask my guests, like, what happens the next day after you stop drinking? Because I think it's so important. The next day I woke up and my husband and son were coming home that day. And I thought, oh yeah, you said you're going to quit drinking last night. Right. Like, right, that's probably not going to happen. When my husband got home, I told him, I can't drink anymore. I just can't drink. And that was like the hardest thing. My husband and I have such a great relationship. It was the hardest thing to tell him because I was telling somebody else, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even though it was him, I was telling him he was a drinker. And he said to me, I don't have to drink anymore either. And that was another like, oh yeah, right. How are we going to do this together? What are we going to do with our time? And I felt hopeful. I felt excited, I guess, in a way that it was something different because I do like change. I'm not somebody who resists change, but I also was very doubtful the next day. I just felt like, you know, I don't know how you're going to do this. But I just did it, like they say, one day at a time. And I didn't want to go to AA. I felt a lot of shame. I'm all for AA. I'm all for any kind of program that you can get help with. I did it on my own. And I was literally on my own back then. I didn't know of many books or anything like that. It really wasn't on, I was on Facebook, but it wasn't on Instagram or anything. There wasn't this sobriety movement that I knew about. And I just hung with it. And it was tough. It was tough for me.
I imagine it has to be way more tough doing it without a community, right? Like, I would have never been able to do it if I didn't have a community of people to connect with and to talk about all the things I was experiencing and the thoughts I was having and how weird it felt sometimes, you know, because you're shifting identities. Like, it's big. Like, yeah. I was a party person the first half of my adult life. That's who I was. And you're shifting identities, and that touches, like we were talking about aging and all the weird little ways that it affects your life. Well, getting sober is the same. And I don't think I would have survived it if I didn't have that community. And also the accountability, that was huge for me too. For myself, in that I could make the commitment to go to a meeting every day. And that's how I could gauge if I was still really active in my choice or if I was starting to fall off, right? It's like I had this thing. If I didn't want to go to a meeting, I was like, oh, weird. Okay, get your happy buns to a meeting because that's obviously where you need to be, you know? But it put a structure and accountability and acceptance, love, fun. Like, it was just the cheat sheet for me, you know? And I don't think I would have survived it if I didn't have that.
I know, just you explaining that, and you were explaining that on our podcast that we did for 250 and beyond. It was so helpful. I missed out. I really missed out. And I know that a lot of women, especially at this stage of life, I'm going to keep saying it, you know, we do feel alone. We feel embarrassed. if we don't have other people around us, it's even more difficult who aren't drinking, who are saying to me, like, I always think back and I talk to my clients in my group about this a lot. Like, what do you need to hear either in early sobriety or what did you need to hear when you stopped drinking? And I would have loved to have heard, this is going to be one of the best decisions you will ever make in your life. Cause I didn't look at it like that. I looked at it as, again, I am on the outside now. Everybody else can drink normally and enjoy alcohol, which is what I really wanted to do. But what I really wanted more than anything was to feel better. And I knew that I couldn't have the best of both worlds there. They didn't work together. So I was going to have to go all in to living alcohol free. But I felt very alone. And I literally got my inspiration from listening to a lot of Eminem while I was at the gym. I felt like if he could do it, I could do it. Of course, Jamie Lee Curtis, like, you know, celebrities really is where I was gaining inspiration. But you know what is the coolest thing, Angela, because you mentioned accountability. I was not somebody who had, I would consider discipline in my life at all. I would say I was going to do things and never follow through. You know, you make it to day 7 or day 30, dieting, saving money, drinking, whatever.
Exercising, eating vegetables. Exercising. Yeah, you name it. Yes. Yeah. I quit everything.
All of it. Yes, I quit everything. I'm good at quitting. And one of the coolest things that you could do for yourself, especially as you get older, is to learn how to hold yourself accountable and keep your word to yourself. I think that is just a gift that nobody should leave on the table of life. Honestly, because it changes all areas of your life when you do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things they need to be teaching us in school. But it is, you're exactly right. I mean, we break our promises to ourselves and you have zero understanding of the impact that it has on you emotionally, mentally, your self-esteem, right? It's like, if I can't even depend on myself, like who am I going to depend on? And how can anybody else count on me? If I can't count on me, how can anybody else count on me? Like, it really has a profound effect for sure.
It really does. We're good at being responsible for other people. You know, most of us, we show up. We show up. If you need me, I am there. But we put so many, and I'm seeing women in general, but of course men do this as well. It's like we put other people before ourselves. You know, there's always going to be a reason to do that. And most of us will drink because of that. You know, we're keeping things going.
Yeah.
We're taking care of, you know, as we get older, we're taking care of grandkids. We're taking care of our kids still. We're taking care of our parents. I mean, there's so many reasons in midlife, like we need to keep things going. And there's also these same reasons that it's good to remove alcohol. I think I veered off of what I was saying.
I was going to say too, I mean, on that accountability piece and always, I will always perform better for other people. Listen, there's no way I would be 300 plus episodes into a podcast if I didn't have at one, there was a point early on that I missed a week, right? Because when you first start a podcast, you have no idea how hard it is. You have no idea how time consuming it is, right? So you really start to question yourself. And really early in my first year, I missed an episode 1 week. And immediately somebody was like, what? No episode this week? Where's this week's episode? Did I miss the episode? And all of a sudden I had that external accountability. Well, that was the same thing meetings did for me. It was about getting, I could not wait to get there every day and let those people know I was still sober. It created that external accountability, which I will always perform better with external accountability. Now, at the same time, and I think I would love to hear your perspective on this as well, because I think you'll probably relate. I think this is why a lot of us start our own programs, because there is an understanding that not everybody is going to make it to a 12-step meeting or a Smart Recovery meeting or a Celebrate Recovery meeting, right? Not everybody is going to do that. And as I sat in AA and watched my life changing before my eyes, watching myself transform into a person I never even knew I was capable of being, I had this moment of understanding that you didn't have to be in AA to learn all that stuff, right? Like AA didn't have personal development on lockdown. And I was like, well, other people can learn this same stuff and have the same transformation without ever coming to these rooms. That's why I wanted to start working in the field and helping people and doing my own thing. Because for me, I don't care where you go or if you go nowhere. I want everyone to have help, period. Yeah. I don't care what it is. I don't care if there are steps. I don't care. I don't care, but I want everybody to have help. And that's where podcasting is this beautiful platform, because it gives all of us the opportunity to put our spin on living a life of recovery and what it means and what it looks like and how to do it.
Absolutely. I would have loved a podcast back then. Right. In 2013. Yes. I know they existed, but I didn't. Maybe the Bubble Hour. The Bubble Hour might have been around in 2013. I'm almost positive. Yeah, definitely. We all need a place. We all need to realize that we need support and we deserve support more than anything. I mean, we deserve support. And I think it comes down to two, knowing your personality. Mm-hmm. I do thrive very well off of accountability. That was just something I was very... there was just non-negotiable on. Mm. Like I will take this to my grave. And then I started a podcast in 2018. And actually I started talking about it publicly on Instagram on an anonymous account called 250 and Beyond, because I wanted to start talking about changing my diet. And then I started realizing, oh, I could talk about sobriety because I wanted that accountability. Mm-hmm. And that's where I met all kinds of people on social media. So in 2015, when I started Instagram, is when I started to publicly speak about my drinking and not drinking. And then I started to realize there are so many women that were messaging me and thanking me. And I thought, I was so hooked on podcasts at the time. I'm like, maybe someday I'll start my own podcast. And 3 years later, I did it, because I always think I'm talking to one gal and she's a lot like me. And when that next day after I said I stopped drinking, I felt so alone and so scared. I would have loved to have heard from somebody else. And so that's how I've always approached the podcast. I don't talk to the masses. I talk to one person. We have to have a safe place, especially for women later in life, to be able to come, because it's hard. It gets harder and harder, I think, the older you get to really change, because, you know, we grew up with, well, suck it up. You know, you're feeling a certain way, suck it up. You're drinking too much, don't tell anybody. Like, don't tell anybody any of this stuff. Keep it to yourself. So it's hard to get connected to a community. I totally understand it, but it's very helpful.
Yeah.
It's very helpful.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So fast forward to actually starting your podcast. And what did that process look like for you?
I went into my closet one day with my iPhone and I recorded my first episode, not knowing what I was doing. I really didn't have a plan. I thought, oh, maybe I'll do 10 episodes. I was just itching to talk about menopause and sobriety. I was itching to talk about it. I'm a very shy person. So I'm, you know, an introvert, shy, however you want to call it. I'm not going to tell anybody, put out a podcast. I'm just going to put it up. So the first month I had 36 downloads. I'm like, where are these people coming from? Nobody even knows. You know, it took me forever to figure out how to even put it up on, you know, get a host and all of that. And then I started talking about it. I thought I'd never going to do interviews. I did my first interview. And then I was like, oh, I love to interview people, because I am a very curious person. And I love to ask questions, and it respectively, of course, but you know, it's like, I think that may be my wheelhouse. I really do. It's very interesting. The stories we believe in about ourselves and our personality. Like, I had been called shy from day one. I think, you know, she's shy. Lori's shy. I used to break out in hives on my neck and wear turtlenecks all the time to drink to cover those hives. And then we do something like that and you blow your mind. And those are the things that we do to build confidence in ourselves, you know? And the podcast was that for me. I love it so much. I've been able to meet so many people, met you through podcasting, so many women and men, of course, from around the world, that you just think, I would never have met any of these people if I had kept drinking, if I hadn't started the podcast. You know, we can look back and go, oh yeah, this is progress for sure. This is good progress. And I just love it.
Yeah, it's fun. I definitely agree that the doors that it opens and the people that you get to meet and really have these phenomenal conversations is something I say. I'm a total introvert too. So podcasting is kind of perfect for that personality. But I always say, you know, a quality of an introvert is, This is why we don't tend to like a lot of people, being around a lot of people, because an introvert wants to connect deeply. Yeah. We don't like surface level, right? And I, listen, if you're going to come into a conversation with me, we're going to get down and dirty on a soul level quick. And I don't do it on purpose, but it is just how I'm wired. I want to connect with your soul. I do not want to talk about the weather. You know, like, I don't want to talk about the niceties and the surface stuff. Like, we're going to get into it. And this platform and getting to meet all of these people like yourself and have these soul connecting conversations, to me, is one of the greatest gifts of my life.
It really is. And it's funny hearing you say that. I realized how many relationships I had in my life, and I still love these people, but a lot of people aren't comfortable with those deep, meaningful conversations. And I always felt like, again, you're strange. I was told many times, you ask a lot of questions. Like, isn't that what we're supposed to do? Right? It's life. I'm a Scorpio. I'm passionate. I like to learn about people. I don't like superficial. So the superficial makes me uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's like that awkward feeling. But I don't do this with strangers. Sometimes I do. Like, you know, how are you doing? Yeah, that's what I love about it. And I love to have smaller groups of women with meaningful conversations, and sober women. I mean, honestly, I feel like sober people, let's say that, we can have different conversations that aren't superficial. And because we understand where we're coming from, we understand where we've been for a lot of us. And I find a lot of meaning in that. I find a lot of meaning in podcasting.
Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the journey for sure. Podcasts didn't even exist when I got sober. Like, it wasn't even a thing. I think literally when I got sober was the very first year of like the first podcast ever, which of course, like, nobody was listening because it was the Isn't beginning. It? But yeah, it's crazy. Like, everything I do today, I could have never foreseen when I got sober. And that's a message I really like to get across to people, because, and I'm going to ask you this too, like, what was your biggest fear when you got sober? Because people sit back and they're like, they can't figure out what the rest of their life is going to look like alcohol free. They can't figure out, like, what does this look like? What do I do? Where do I go? Who am I hanging out with? How am I going to have fun? Are people going to accept me if I'm not drinking now? And they're freaking out, future tripping about all of these things. And it's like, this is where one day at a time comes in too, because, dude, you are not going to be able to figure that out, because even the brain you are using at day one is very different than the brain you're going to be using at day 30, very different from the brain you're going to be using at day 90, right? Like, you just evolve and change so fast. There's no way to foresee what your future is going to look like, or to try to figure it out. And what was that experience for you as you thought about the rest of your life not drinking?
Oh, yeah. I started journaling about 6 months before I quit drinking to track my perimenopause. And that's when I started to write about my drinking. Like, I was facing it, because I didn't even want to write about it, but I was writing about it and I was facing it. So I would write in that journal the beginning of that first year of sobriety and beyond. I'm a huge journaler, but it was good to document that experience, and that fear that I felt was just exactly what you had said. I was so worried. My son was 12 at the time. What am I going to do when he gets married? I mean, I was future tripping. But what you had mentioned earlier about the identity shift, I was known as the party girl. Long Beach, California, I was known as the party girl. Everybody knew me as somebody who was always drinking. Mm-hmm. and so I felt so flat when I stopped drinking. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was very fearful that that would never go away. I was very fearful that I was always going to feel like that. And then also just the feeling like the outcast of the group, not the normal person, because she doesn't drink anymore. I was very fearful of that. I was fearful of what to say to people. I was fearful of their reactions or their non-reaction. It's like, you know, you tell some people, I'm like, oh yeah, how's the weather? You know, let's talk about something else, right? It's like, it's just, yeah, all of it. I was really fearful. And I would say to anybody who is future tripping, we have to remind ourselves that this is normal and it's part of the transition to living alcohol free. Because if you try to say, I can't do this. I can't keep future tripping. You know, it's going to take you probably back to drinking, but it's an unrealistic expectation that it's not going to come up.
Mm-hmm.
It comes up.
It's important to normalize a lot of those fears too, though, because people want to put everything on sobriety. Sobriety is so hard, and sobriety this and sobriety that. But listen, the truth is you're going to go through all of those same exact fears when you go through a breakup, when you have a child, when you lose a job or start a new job, right? Those fears are all the same in all of these life experiences. Sobriety is no different. It's a transition and it can be awkward. It can be uncomfortable. I didn't experience a lot of those things, right? Where a lot of those normal fears, like I didn't have any of that, right? I could not have been less interested in what people's response was going to be. You know, like I was like, this is me, take it or leave it. Like, I don't drink anymore. Who fucking cares? You know, like it just didn't, I just wasn't worried about it. I went to AA and I felt like I was a part of this incredible, exclusive club, right? I didn't have any weird hangups about that. But I also came from Los Angeles where those rooms were full of celebrities, right? So that's probably where a lot of that thought process came for me too, is like, I felt like I was a part of something amazing where other people feel like it's this terrible place, right? I thought I was doing something really cool. But I didn't have any idea what my future would look like, but I knew I would figure it out. Like my life wasn't ending, right? But I also had already moved across the country and back by then. Like I had been through really hard things that I had been challenged. I'd been through a couple of really horrible breakups, like life-altering breakups, you know, and those things in some ways were way harder than getting sober for me. But I think it's so important to kind of normalize the fears in the transition, because you're going to have transition, whether it's sobriety or just life.
Yeah, I love that you said that, because we have to remember there's so many hard things that we've already gotten through. There's so many hard things that we're going to be working through in sobriety. If you're not drinking, I have always felt that the hard stuff is not as hard as without my drinking. That is my 100% truth. But what you were describing, it's like, that's proof of the difference of having community and connection. I feel, I feel like I would have been a lot more confident, especially even listening to a podcast, even, you know, listening to something like this, not even necessarily being in a group or anything. I would have been a lot more confident if there were other people around me like myself.
Yeah.
That we're saying, I totally understand how you feel. And this is a really positive thing that we're doing in our lives. Let's get excited, right? Yeah. It was like, I had to excite myself. I had to pump myself up. And the number one thing that I did was journaling and working out, because I had been very, very inconsistent with exercise my entire life. I went to that gym, I put in my M&M and I worked it out. And that was very helpful for me. That started to build my confidence. And of course, then you experience the perks. You start feeling better. You start to notice your mood, you know, and that's when you got to work on acceptance.
Right, right.
Acceptance of it all. Like, it's not a fluke. It's happening.
That's another great point, though. My sober journey, like getting sober, was not nearly as challenging as my alcoholic journey. Right. There was no peace. Like my last 2 to 3 years of drinking were so hard and so dark and depressed and full of self-loathing. And I hated life and I prayed to die every day. There has never been a moment of my sobriety that has been that hard. And I lived like that for a few years. My recovery has never felt like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. You're right. It was hard for me. And everybody, again, just like menopause, everybody is different with this, how we experience this. It was hard for me because I felt very alone, even though I had family support. But it wasn't as hard as my drinking. Oh, no way.
Right.
No way.
Right. Again, it's perspective. Like, we have to normalize some of these trains of thought that nobody's talking about, right? Because all of it really is normal.
It's normal. And to expect, it's like, check your expectations. Because if you're expecting, you know, to be in this euphoric phase and it doesn't happen for you, you know, this is where we can glean from other stories, but we're not going to attach ourselves to them because we have to create our own quit lit journey, right? You can write your own book here. This is your experience. We do experience it different. But check in with your expectations often. I have to do that.
Oh, yeah.
I do that all the time. It's like, sure. Well, you were expecting something. It didn't happen. Okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
You're going to be all right. Yeah.
I'm very intolerant of not getting my way. So I have to check my expectations regularly.
Me too.
Okay. Final question, favorite question. What is your favorite thing about being a sober person?
That's a good one. Today, I would say it allows me the freedom to be myself, to make the choices that I know I am making, not alcohol, and to really find freedom from all of the BS I put myself through for such a long time, you know, just so much pressure on myself to be someone who I wasn't. I wasn't aligned with my personality at all when I was drinking.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I'm owning it. To say publicly that I'm shy, oh boy, that's a big one. You know, I never discount this stuff. So I feel like it's just being in touch with myself and honoring my personality and my values more than anything. And I never thought that I would be where I am today. I always dreamed of it. Mm-hmm. I dreamt of it. I never thought, and it's just a very simple life. Lots of challenges, lots of messiness, but I'm happy. I'm content.
That's beautiful. Lori, we have mentioned your podcast a couple of times, 250 and Beyond, and I was on your show. Thank you. We had an awesome conversation. For everybody listening, I will link that in the show notes too, so you can go listen to that episode for sure. And tell everybody how to find you, the best way to find you.
You can find me at lorimassicott.com. I'm hoping to make a new entry into Instagram sometime very soon. And the podcast, of course, but lorimassicott.com. Definitely.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Angela. Thank you for having me. Thank you for everything you're doing. I love it.
Right back at you.
You've reached the end of another great episode of the Addiction Unlimited podcast. Candid and honest conversation about addiction and recovery. Be sure to visit us at addictionunlimited.com to join the conversation and access show notes and links to everything we talked about. Love this episode? Please take 30 seconds to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes to help us improve and give you the information you want. Thanks for listening. See you next week.